Welcome to episode 31 of A Legitimate Salvage, your episode by episode, two for the price of one this time, guide to The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
I'm Katie Burt.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
And together, we're detectives. We're here to talk about the fifth and sixth episodes of The Expanse Season 5, Down and Out, and Tribes. Welcome, everybody. We wanted to catch up a little bit because we were falling a little bit off of our wonderful gradual pace. Who would have thought? So we're kicking it old school this time, like we did when we were introducing ourselves to The Expanse after everybody else in the world had seen it. So two episodes in one this time, Down and Out and Tribes. We're watching these very, very, very heavy episodes at a particularly heavy time. Could The Expanse be even more ripped from the headlines than it was last time around? It just kind of feels like it could, and in fact was.
Eep
is right.
Yeah, so I think it's time for another check-in. You know, is this still enjoyable? Is this, you know, is this the kind of story that it does continue to make us feel better because it reflects the world that we live in?
Well, it means we'll go to space sometime, so there's that.
Well, I don't know if cathartic is the right word, but I definitely started watching the second episode of this right after all these, like, crazy events at the U.S. Capitol happened. And I definitely just started crying as Christian was crying. And sometimes it's nice to just be like, oh, she's doing really bad. And just to be able to do that, even while the whole political violence of these episodes was really hard to watch in the context of what's also happening in America.
If Christian is crying, then we're crying.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But she doesn't cry, so.
No, she doesn't.
No.
I mean, there wasn't an F-bomb in the entire episode from her.
Which is a tragedy, honestly.
I do think that even just having a story that is fictional is enough of a, like, escape or distance for me to feel like, even as heavy as this is, it still felt like an escape from reality. And I feel like that's one of the reasons a lot of people enjoy science fiction is because there's some sort of distance, whether it's like, you know, time, it's like the future or the past or whatever, or like a completely different world or reality. And yeah, that's definitely one of my chief coping mechanisms, not just science fiction, but stories in general that allow me to take a break and process some of my feelings in a safer, or what feels like a safer way and place.
Yeah, I was going to say, the other thing about this is that, not that I agree with what the Inners did, but they are the downtrodden in this one. They aren't the ostensible elite. And also, they're not crazy. So those are two key differences from what we saw in the Capitol.
Yes.
No, and as we go through the recap, you know, we started out last time in Gaugamela, we talked about the areas in which the Belters and Inaros, just in the language that they were using, were making sense. And we have more moments of that this time around. But saying the right things, doing bad things for the right reasons or whatever it is, you know, those moral conflicts, I hope we get more of the exploration of the moral conflict, because right now, the Belters that we're seeing are pretty much either uniformly behind Marco and Aros or feel like they're sort of trapped into participating. But I think I'm getting ahead of myself. let's run through the episode's descriptions real quick for last week's episode, Down and Out, and this week's episode, Tribes. Just sort of recapping everything that happened in both episodes. Bobby and Alex watch the weapons transfer, which they realize isn't just some guns, but the entire Martian ships are the weapons for Marco's Free Navy. They are spotted, and even with the speed of the Razorback, they're not able to escape. However, Bobby manages to fight off an OPA boarding party, and Alex successfully sets a bomb off on the OPA ship. Solid Iron Man action from Bobby Draper. We've been waiting for that. Christian is desperately sending messages to Arjun as the new Secretary General. He was in transportation, guys. Comes to meet her. He acknowledges how, as the former Secretary of the Interior, he is in way over his head and asks her to join his provisional cabinet. This is the worst we've ever seen her. A sad Christian is something to behold. Amos and Clarissa are trapped in the underground prison and team up with three guards and one prisoner, Chekhov's tiny, to escape. The only way out is to scale a ladder in the maintenance shaft by shooting and pulling out panels at each level. They emerge onto the surface to find complete destruction. Their action film continues as Tiny kills another guard before Amos manages to fling Tiny back down the elevator shaft. Clarissa is feeling the effects of the anti-implant drugs, but the duo decide to head through the woods to avoid authorities on their way to Baltimore. As they walk, they talk about their very different childhoods and their parents. They approach a cabin for supplies, and Clarissa uses her mods to kill the owner. As Clarissa reflects on their actions, Amos says he needs to get back to his crew. Amos without a moral compass? Scary guy. Holden and Bull interrogate Sakai, but she believes in the righteousness of her actions and she isn't revealing a thing. Luckily, Monica's eye camera caught the Zemea's flight plan, and Holden and Bull leave to get the Rossi ready to pursue the Belter ship. Naomi, she's on hunger strike as she's allowed to wander the ship and be subject to Marcos's manipulation. He tells her she's free to leave on her ship, except dang, she gave it to Philip, who wants her to stick around. Sin tries to reconcile with her, while Carol tells Naomi she will never leave. Naomi makes a weak attempt at killing Marco, but manages to send a message just in time to tell Holden that the Rossi's reactor has been sabotaged. With the Rossi repaired, Monica joins the Rossi crew as they head out to find the Zemea. Back on the Pella, Marco is pissed that Naomi was able to thwart the destruction of the Rossi and demands that Philip space her, but Sin tells Marco to do it himself, and Philip asks for her life to be spared. Philip confronts Naomi about choosing her Rossi family over them, and she tells him that someday he will feel the consequences of becoming a murderer. And finally, Drummer discusses with Oksana that she had the chance to kill Marco. The crew debates whether to meet Marco, but ultimately Drummer says they can't hide from the new reality. Drummer and her family convene with Marco's Navy and agree to join with them. Quote, "The only choice left for us is to join him or die." They exchange one crew member each, with Carol, who offered to space Naomi earlier in the episode, joining Drummer's crew. They'll get along famously. As they are departing, Philip lets it slip to Drummer that he is in contact with Naomi. Philip joins Naomi in her cell to ask her about the behemoth and what Drummer meant when she said that Naomi saved every soul in the system. As Marco spies on their conversation, he sets a course to intercept the Rossi. And that was Down and Out and Tribes, and that was a lot. So, beautiful Ropier rhetoric juxtaposed with Marcos' actions, which are continue to be, you know, genocidal and violent, and he continues to be one heck of an emotional manipulator. I don't know if it's just his eyeliner or what, but he is striking me as more and more in these two episodes a villain from central casting, you know, Scar in The Lion King, that sort of thing.
A little more subtle than that, but yeah.
A little more subtle. Yeah, talk to me about that, about how Marco is playing off right now.
He's definitely a gaslighting scumbag, but he's good at it, as opposed to just being like, not to drag Doctor Who into this, but the guy from the Horns of Nymon who waves his cape around. He's a little less cape wavy than one of those guys, or Scar for that matter. Scar instantly like, oh, that guy. But you can sort of see, just to drag another show into this, in The Warriors, the 1970s movie, there's a big rally where this gang leader gets killed, and you instantly go, oh, I can see why everybody wants to follow this guy. He's charismatic as hell, even if I don't agree with him. And there is an element to that to Marco. You can see why people are lured into him, because he is a very charismatic dude who's also terrible and evil and a mass murderer. So humanity has sort of a record of that sort of thing.
I feel like they do a good job too of implying and also just like actually making text like the history of mm-hmm. like his relationships with all these people around mm-hmm. him, which I think helps do a lot of the work too, in terms of if we had been following these characters for as long as we've been following everyone else, like how would we feel about them? I mean, still genocidal, but like maybe a bit more nuanced. But he does seem to like really up his evil factor when he's like, okay, let's just murder Naomi, the mother of my child. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a great scene.
And puts his son on the spot about like, well, what are you going to do about it? Like, that's the thing. It's like, and then kind of shames him for being compassionate. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I just keep saying throughout these episodes out loud how much I hate him. But also, I think they do a great job, I think, of setting up. He's always has like multiple manipulations set up, mm-hmm. I think. He's someone who knows his crew really well. And I think probably because they've been serving together for a very long time. And he and Naomi have this history. But you can see how he really knows how to manipulate all of them.
Yeah, his emotional intelligence is actually really high. He just uses it for evil rather than good, which is kind of a cool villain move.
You got to wonder what his sticky end is going to come to. If it'll be, I can't remember his name now, but the main villain in season four, who just kind of like, well, you're going to be under arrest. Yeah. Or is holding it to lose it and kill this guy. Because he's certainly got every reason in the world to do so.
Yeah. I thought that the confrontation between Marco and Philip and Sin on the bridge when Marco wants to space Naomi is really interesting. I am used to, due to current events, megalomaniacal dictators not suffering insubordination. I was fully expecting Marco to kill Sin just right there on the spot, and it didn't happen. And I'm glad that there was tension on the bridge. I'm glad that we are seeing that not all of the Belter characters are rubber stamp fanatics, but I was interested in seeing why Marco didn't deal with this challenge to his authority right there on his bridge. If he's the leader of this free Navy and he's imagining himself the vanguard of this glorious future for the OPA, how did they get away with it?
I think the fact that Sin is not like, you can't kill her, I will stop you, and more like, I'm not going to do it. Like, like, if you want, I think like that nuance in his like, insubordination is probably helpful. But I'm also like, Marco is a clever guy. And as much as he is emotional, he does a lot of times have like a rein on that emotion. So he doesn't necessarily like react in the moment. But I do wonder if Sin's days are numbered because of this.
I think his knee-jerk reaction is, oh, we got to kill Naomi. But tactically, it probably makes sense for him to keep her around. So I wonder if, as that conversation is happening, he's kind of just like, I'll throw it on my kid to make this decision.
Because either way, there's a benefit to him.
Yeah.
Like a win-win situation, weirdly.
He just hasn't gone the full Khan Noonien Singh yet.
He's also one guy on a ship. He still has to run this thing. So there's only so much being tyrannical you can be with, I don't know, 500-600 people before it's going to blow up on you.
And I'm curious how many, like, I guess we saw him. We saw him kill Ashford. I was going to say the difference between killing another Belter and murdering, like, millions of inners and how that plays amongst his followers, especially as he's working to like consolidate a lot of the Belters who aren't necessarily, you know, who aren't excited about supporting him. I wonder, like, as he's looking to have Drummer come on as an ally, knowing that, murdering Naomi would seriously endanger that strategy.
He's also got a long-term plan here, you know. Or does he? Earth has always used agriculture to control us. There will be thin years. He's talking about like 10 years down the road. The agriculture stuff at Ganymede, which we saw way, way back in season two, will be back up and running. And, you know, they'll be able to, with the solar mirrors and all that other stuff, you know, they'll be able to feed people again eventually. But there will be lean years for about 10 years. I don't know if he's thought this through.
I mean, maybe because I'm a farmer, that particularly, I was like, no, you need food. You need starving people don't follow you necessarily, you know, or you have to use a lot more force to get starving people to think your idea is great, right? Like most of these people want to rise up if they do want to rise up because resources have been controlled by other people. But to think he's like, oh, thin years. It's like, oh, that sounds like a lot of people die from starvation is what that sounds like.
I know. If I were Drummer or her crew, I would have asked some follow-up questions there. It's like, let's define thin.
I've got a couple thoughts about this. One is that he seems like more of a bold moves guy than a long-term planning and logistics guy. So he's done this thing and now he's got to deal with it. But the other thing is, I don't buy it from an overall story perspective that the belt would be tied to Earth for food, because that's the first thing you'd do if you went out in space. It'd be definitely top five on your list, is have food sources of your own at hand. You're not going to just Because what happens if everything breaks down, right? Like a million different reasons that don't involve this guy taking over. It just doesn't make any logical sense. And what about all these ships flying around? What are they eating? Is it stuff from Earth? Like it makes sense that they would have already solved this problem 100 years ago, and it wouldn't be a factor. There's a bunch of other reasons, but it just seems like a cheat. You know what I mean?
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're right, though, winning is easier. Governing is harder. Mm-hmm.
Reference acknowledged.
Yes. Reference to the last 4 years acknowledged.
Well, that too. How are we feeling about the casting of the Belters? Al Phillips' character is coming across. Marco, as we're getting to know him a little bit better. How do we feel about this merry band?
Phillip looks like Naomi. Like, obviously, he's not related, but they nailed that. It definitely looks like her kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I actually have seen Dominic Tipper be like, I don't know how they found, like, he could be my kid. Like, he looks so uncannily like me.
Do you guys know how old the actor is? Because this is something we were discussing while we were watching it. Because he they did a good job finding someone who feels young in a way that makes his character a lot more like sympathetic, I think, than he would be otherwise.
I'm quickly Googling.
He looks old enough to be threatening, but young enough to be Naomi's kid, which is a trick because Naomi doesn't look that old to my eyes either.
She's maybe 40 and he's maybe 20 is my guess. Mm-hmm. Also, it's the future. They could have, you know, they're curing Holden's cancer. These people could all be in their 50s for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
They could be 500 years old. They could be like baby Yodas all over the place, you know? I am enjoying seeing Marco's arc lengthen, and I was right there with Drummer, though. Like, you know, she could have just spaced him. She could have just spaced him right there a couple of seasons ago, and that would have been the end of it, and there wouldn't be millions of people dead on Earth.
Yeah, that was such a good callback. Because she made a smart decision based on, like, the status quo of the universe at that point, and that status quo has obviously changed.
She knew he was manipulative. She knew what his aims were, but I think for her to imagine, like, he was going to be able to team up with a bunch of Martians in order to get a military, I think, is pretty unimaginable.
So speaking of Drummer, so let's talk about what happens with her family. And it's made very clear, you know, this is not a crew, this is a family. Her pirate running gang, there's an awful lot of free love happening there. They are together emotionally and physically and everything in a way that Marco's Free Navy clearly is not. Mm-hmm. They have a really tough choice ahead of them when Marco reaches out and says, you know, okay, you're going to join? And that's not an invitation, that's a threat. I felt really sad seeing them sort of trapped in the decision that seemed to them to be inevitable.
I really liked seeing the contrast of her. I mean, she is the captain of this ship and this family, but she wants to have a discussion about it and actually hear everyone out. And, you know, it does end up feeling like the decision is inevitable, but the fact that that's how she runs her ship is very telling. I think it's also interesting to see the scene with Oksana, and I don't know who the other guy is that's part of their family. I don't know. There's a lot of characters on that ship where they're just talking about knowing that she kind of can be impulsive and talking about, like, well, how do we plan for that when we get on Marco's ship? And you even see it where Oksana's like, all right, let's stop talking about the past. Let's talk about what we're doing right now. And to see how they're all kind of helping her in that moment is really interesting.
Yeah, and that dude is also like, I think she'll be okay. And she really is. Like, I feel like Drummer really doesn't, you know, react too impulsively. Like, she shows her emotion and she makes at least a degree of her opinion known, but she also acts very smartly, I think.
Well, Marco's really trying to needle her, as he does most people, and she doesn't really rise to it.
Okay. I have breaking news about Josiah Chase Owens. That's the name of the actor. The internet doesn't know his age. I have looked all over the place. But he did graduate from college in 2017. So let's say around 23, 24 years old, 25, something like that. Okay. So that's my very important breaking news. The name of the actor, which we could have just looked up, which I did, in fact, just look up.
And he looks younger. He's got the Tom Holland thing going on.
Yeah, he looks like he just had a growth spurt. He has that like teen boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, just very good casting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just to sort of wrap up our look at the Belters, we end Tribes with him actually reaching out to Naomi and trying to make a connection, which is something that clearly Marco doesn't want him to be doing. You know, I see a flight path to him having to make a decision whether he's going to defend his mother, help his mother, whether Naomi actually has a chance to reach out to him or not. There's a fairly obvious way that the story could go that it looks like it's building toward, but who knows? All kinds of bad things have been happening. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for more bad things, but I'm glad that he's not just the stone-faced, I don't care about you, mom, person that he was in the beginning of the season.
That was another thing that I was surprised Marco let happen. Those two, like, sit in a cell together and to talk. But, like, the fact that he's, like, watching it just makes it feel like, I don't know, like, they're his lab rats. Like, and he's just letting things play out in a very controlled way. It's very creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, she's going to tell him about the protomolecule, and that kid will know as much as anybody other than her on that ship about the protomolecule. Because all Marcos really knows is that it's valuable and he's got it. And it's a bargaining chip. He doesn't know what it can do, and she can tell in great detail, or not, what the deal is with this protomolecule. So the kid might, you know, help her get rid of it.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's easy to forget that we think of, like, the Rossi crew of the center of this universe. And they are so often the center of these system-changing events.
Mm-hmm.
It's in that moment I was like, oh yeah, Philip knows probably a completely different narrative.
Let's take a sidestep to Luna real quick and check in on Christian, who cannot reach her husband and is visited by the designated survivor, the Secretary of the Interior. The contrast between these really powerful, ambitious women who have been the previous Secretaries General and this guy, who is clearly in over his head and makes no bones about it.
Good.
Yeah, I like this guy. Mm-hmm. I like that he doesn't seem to be panicking, which is impressive and an important skill. And also he's smart enough to know that Christian is someone he needs. And that, more than anything, makes me like him and makes me wonder, excited to see how this plays out.
Presumably with her in charge again, you'd think.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like he wants the job.
No.
I'm surprised he didn't just give it to her right then and there, to be honest. Although she obviously was having a bad day.
Yeah, so Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Intelligence. I'll be interested to see what job she gets. The book readers know, of course. She shows a range of vulnerability in this episode that she has not shown in any previous one. She's been allowed to show fear, emotional wounding, but this is, she's shattered. She's possibly lost her husband, and she came this close to saving the Earth, but didn't. There's a whole lot going on in there.
Yeah, everything really just catches up with her in this episode. It's like we saw her maintain her composure, which obviously would have involved a lot of like compartmentalization on her part. But, you know, even someone like Christian can only do that for so long. And I think, yeah, I can see how you responded to this so emotionally, Jen, as a viewer, just because that feels like that's so much of like our reality right now is like or at least for me, and I think a lot of people who are working or being there for their families, where it just feels like you have to compartmentalize so much of what's going on, but that only works for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely relatable.
Yeah.
We only spend a little bit of time with her in these two episodes, and we only spend, comparatively speaking, a little bit of time with Holden in these two episodes. His job is to be the hero and the captain, and there's not a lot of heroing and captaining to do just yet. We get the sort of tense interrogation scene, which doesn't amount to a whole lot, just reiteration that Marco's faction is radicalized and just doesn't care, and that's sort of that rubber stamping piece that I was talking about before. We get a little bit of that, but not a lot for Holden yet. I'm presuming next time, since we've got what looks to be a space conflict brewing between the Pella and Rossi, perhaps Stephen Strait gets something to do. What we spent an awful lot of time on, and this was something also completely new to The Expanse, post-apocalyptic disaster movie.
And hiking. Don't forget the hiking.
Yeah.
Lots of hiking for Amos and Clarissa. Talk to me about this, especially since we've been spending a fair bit of time in previous episodes wondering what the point of Clarissa is.
Yeah, I still don't understand why he visited her in the first place. Like, just to catch up? Like, what was the deal with that?
Even going into these two episodes, I didn't like her. I got more on board on these episodes, I think. I still don't, I agree with you, Warren. I still don't understand why he went to visit her, other than this loose, like, well, I want to help someone, maybe.
Yeah,
like,
why that's is this all I can come up with.
Yeah, but I do enjoy their dynamic. I enjoy her, you know, talking about all her field trips to visit trees. And he's like, I didn't know there were so many trees. Like, there's so many similarities between the two of them. And yet they like really, she provides a nice kind of contrast to him in terms of like, yeah, you're both killers and you're both violent, but you're really coming from different places and maybe experiencing the same thing very differently.
Seeing them reflect on murdering that man. Also,
which is straight up what they did.
Yeah. Which is, it just felt really, it was like one of those moments where it was like, The Expanse is taking the time to do something that most shows wouldn't. Because I feel like that sort of thing would fly by on another show and they wouldn't reflect on it. Like, the characters wouldn't reflect on it. The show wouldn't reflect on it. So to see them do that and also not really try to justify it in any real way was interesting.
I was watching it and just going, yeah. It's this is, of course, what would happen. We're in post-apocalyptic, and it's not entirely in post-apocalyptic in reality. We've had three huge disasters, but civilization hasn't collapsed yet. And yet, in this scene is all Viggo Mortensen, you know. It's all sort of artificially heightened. All is lost. We're only in it ourselves. We get a great monologue from Amos about when the churn happens, tribes get smaller, and it's every person for themselves. Clarissa, who's had lots of time to think about this, responds to that. And that last line of the episode where Amos says that he needs to get back to his crew to find his moral compass. Again, this is a guy who depends on somebody to be his moral compass for him because he just can't do it himself, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
To make another obligatory Battlestar Galactica reference.
I don't have a Babylon 5 reference queued up. You're going to be one
up
on me.
Well, you have some time to think about it while I give my BSG reference. This episode reminded me a lot of Starbuck's return to Caprica, kind of like... after you feel like the show is like really moving away from Caprica and like the 12 colonies and going someplace else. And she goes back to this mission and like visits her old apartment and has this scene where she just kind of gives a monologue about how she's fighting because she just doesn't know how to do anything else. And it just made, it really struck me how similar her character is to Amos in some ways, watching this episode and reflecting back on that.
Well, because she talks about how she doesn't have anything to go back. Like, she never had a good life on Earth or on Caprica. And it's the same thing with him. He never really had a good life on Earth.
Like, to have a different relationship with an apocalyptic event where...
Yeah. Yeah, your home isn't destroyed in the same way, even though it is your home and it is like terrible. It's also like you've already moved on to something else that actually mm-hmm. makes a lot more sense for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me that at the same time that Amos is sort of devolving a bit in the sort of Law of the Jungle stuff, he's also making further and further steps as a nurturer, which is unusual territory for the
man. Was it season two when he got his empathy taken out somehow or something? Or it was this little side thing they did. It was basically the equivalent of Fat Apollo in BSG, just to add that way.
Well, he was
kind of didn't go anywhere.
When Naomi betrayed him, he took it very poorly for a while. Mm-hmm. And she was mm-hmm. his anchor then.
True, yes.
Yeah, yeah. But now seems to be like Holden is still his anchor. Like when he mentions like, yeah, I don't think Holden would have been okay with this. It was pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
No, he wouldn't have.
No, he would not. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
One of the themes of The Expanse is individual moral responsibility, even when you have nothing to gain from it and when the situation is awful. And sometimes that feels possibly a little cheesy. Sometimes Holden feels a little cheesy. But this episode is really sort of trying to lean into that, where Clarissa has this Jiminy Cricket moment that, well, maybe we just killed this guy and took his stuff. That's probably probably wrong. You've come a long way, Clarissa. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's even their escape, to go back from when they're escaping from the prison. I imagine if someone like a Holden or a Naomi was stuck in that prison, they would at least maybe like check some of the other cells to see. Like, they kind of abandon whoever else is left there, mm-hmm. presumably some other people. Some of them maybe you don't want to let out. Tiny was useful, but also terrifying. And I'm sure some of the people down there are in that category. But at the same time,
like if a Clarissa is down there, then who else is? It's not so much about the most evil people being down there, whatever that means. It's about the like people who are physically able to
escape,
which doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I point out though, that was a great flip where Amos throws him off and down that pipe. That was beautiful.
That was fantastic choreography.
I loved that.
The whole thing. I especially liked that Clarissa tries to activate her mod. And you're positive that that's when she's going to open up the can of whoop ass and that's going to be the solution to the problem. And then she just crumples. It doesn't work. And so the situation is resolved in a completely different way than we're expecting. And I think that really sells the flip even more so, because you don't expect it to come from there. I'm fascinated by the Amos and Clarissa arc, even if I'm not necessarily fascinated by Clarissa. Just to see the growth that Amos is going through in this, and they're walking around in capes, which is also lovely.
I also think though they've got to get off this explore the forest outside Toronto thing pretty quick, or it's gonna get dull. Like something else, like get to Baltimore in the next episode or something, you know, or along the way to it, or they, you know, or don't just make this into some low budget horror movie, which is fine. But yeah,
I agree.
I want
that.
More from the Expanse.
I think our final stop on our recap of these two episodes is on the Razorback and Team Alex and Bobby. I love how Bobby is absolutely the captain of this ship.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She is in charge. She is giving Alex's his orders, and Alex is yes ma'aming, and that is the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
That's also, to correct you, as I push my glasses up, a Captain America move she does there, I believe from Civil War, where he's holding on to the
helicopter.
That's
what I said.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although I was like, how is she doing that? This is a ship and another ship. How is she, even with power armor, that seems unlikely.
Yeah.
But it was cool as hell.
I like that she isn't able
to. Oh, it was cool. Yeah.
It looked cool. It was cool. I do like that she isn't able to just hold it for the whole time, because that also does seem like impossible. And seeing Alex make the jump in space just reminded me of the horror of seeing the movie Gravity in theaters in 3D. And that movie does all of that so well. Just like, the complete lack of control in so many ways of like, and like all these like familiar forces that you're used to using to navigate the like world. And I feel like his jump and having like not being able to see the, you know, the Razorbacks rotation, the way they film that is so well done. And it was so scary.
And the thing is, not just used to, we're biologically designed to do it. So when you see, you feel almost sick when you see it not happening, because you're like, oh, that's been taken away from me in a way. You know what I mean? Like,
It's like the most, I thought Gravity was so scary.
A horror movie.
I was like, I'm never going to space.
I love also how the action sequences here, you know, you take for granted when you have a ship with guns in an action sequence that, you know, they're going to shoot their way out of it. The Razorback is unarmed. And unlike when Bobby and Christian were escaping, and the Razorback, when they initially salvaged it legitimately, and they were just basically trying to run away, they're doing a lot of countermeasures and subterfuge and things like that, but they're spying in a racing ship, and you've got nothing left once you get found out. And the tension about that is just, it is just really good. Great action sequence in these two episodes.
Yeah. When Bobby's just like, we're going to die, aren't we? And yeah, they're really, they're very close to not surviving.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite sets in the show. It's very simple. You've just got these pilot seats and gimbals, but it really comes across great.
It does.
So I'm feeling a lot more excited about these episodes that I have just watched just before recording. I'm feeling a lot more excited about them, having talked them through with you, as opposed to sort of sitting with the existential dread that I began with.
That's our goal, Chip.
Yep.
So I guess that The Expanse is cathartic in difficult times.
Well, we don't know what the next episode told. Or indeed the next week. So
no. What could the news be?
What could the news be? The title of the next episode, Oyading, is the Belter Creole for goodbye or farewell.
So I'm sure it's all going to work out.
Sure,
By the way, does anybody besides me put the subtitles up? Because I'm like, I'm not going to fight this. I'm just going to let them tell me what the Belters are saying.
Yes.
Yeah, I do, you know, and I do it for like thick Scottish accents on other shows and things like that. But this is definitely one of those. And Belter Creole's made up language, but I actually, in a weird way, I kind of want to honor it and make sure that I'm getting the dialogue and understanding what the characters are saying, and don't hesitate to go for the subtitles on this show.
I also used it for Clarissa when she was muttering about monsters. I'm like, what is she talking about? It was just way low, so I'm like, I think I still need these subtitles.
Yeah, like so many things on the show, the production team just put so much work into making it and making the world make sense, so I feel like that kind of investment is almost always worth it when it comes to The Expanse.
I also very much appreciate the Amazon feature of being able to pause it and see who people are.
Oh yeah,
there's
the
so many new
thing.
Characters
yeah, yeah.
that I was trying to figure out who anyone's name, all of the new OPA characters. I'm just like, what is anyone's name? And
I needed
that
for Game of Thrones. For the first two seasons of Game of Thrones, I had no clue who was who until I read the books.
All right, so we will be back next time for Oyading, which will be Season 5, Episode 7. So probably, in all likelihood, one episode, one podcast, back in the swing of things. In the meantime, please follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter and find us on The Incomparable Network, theincomparable.com/salvage. Thank you so much for joining us. Until then,
no shadows for us.